So welcome everyone. Tonight, as you've heard, we're celebrating Baba's birthday. Baba's actual calendar birthday is the 16th of May, which was, Wednesday was that? Wednesday. And it's also Swami Durgananda's birthday. That's an auspicious... pretty auspicious. We born on Baba's birthday. I want to welcome you the way he would always welcome everyone by saying in Hindi, "Sabko barasan mane ke saath prem se rajik swagat." With great respect and love, I welcome you all with all my heart. And that was Baba's welcome. And he said that's the essence of spirituality, to welcome people in an open-hearted way, to welcome yourself, welcome other people with love. And also, everyone watching around the world on the information superhighway. Everybody watching everywhere. Let's see. We have, and I commend you for pulling yourself away from the TV. But you can all look at Princess Vani tonight if you want. How do they go? So, that's great. It's public. It's a great international ritual in public puja. So in the U.S., New York, Chandra Lake is watching New York, and Atmaram and Kashi in Ann Arbor, Gauri and Mark in Canada, and Ramdas in Ganesh Puri, and in Japan, Sahadev and Bill. Sahadev, Leo is leaving tomorrow. He's been here about 6 months, is it? And he did very well. But he didn't quite reach the goal, so you're going to have to deal with it from now on. He did very well here. And Diadevi and Maruti in Adelaide, and in Brisbane at Suvasini, and Pratibha and Judy, and in Byron Bay, the whole house there. I think you're going to be there watching next week, aren't you, Leo? And Turiji, Kyle, Oya, Shamala, and Julia in Byron Bay. And right here are Jyoti. I was hoping Jyoti would make a reappearance in satsang tonight, but she's watching on the internet. She'll be here next week, is that right? So that's great. So I want to welcome you all. So a special treat in honor of Baba's birthday, which... We discovered a little video about a minute or 2 minutes long is all it is. It's old footage, shows Baba around 1970, mostly in Delhi. I met Baba Baba used to go up to Delhi every Shivaratri. Shivaratri is in February. It's the holy night and day of Shiva. And I met him in 1971. In Delhi. What happened is they pitched a big tent on a massive lawn that one of the devotees had there. And that was my first meeting with Baba, this huge number of people on this lawn. And there was Baba sitting like a king. It was great. But I think these views are possibly a year or two before I met him, just around the same time. But he looked pretty much like that, the great images of a young, I mean, just 61 or 60, like that, young, vital Baba, great images. And so let's watch it for a couple of minutes. We'll turn down all the lights.
Thank you.
Brutal. Sama. How's that? Isn't that nice? Yeah. Nice to see Baba like that. So, we have some question answers with Baba. That made me speechless, actually. That's fabulous. That's just the way he was when I met him. So these are question answers with Baba, not from the Ganesh Puri, but from his international travels, from his world tours. He went on, actually he'd be 110 years old today, we'll say. Born in 1908, and my mother was born 2 weeks after him, so she'll be 110 in a couple of weeks. So, and he made three world tours. He first went out in 1970, and by some bizarre karmic coincidence, the day he left India to go to the West, I left America looking for him. Not knowing who he was, though. I was looking for someone, that special someone. But it was on the same day. However, by the time I got to India, because I went overland, it was a short tour, and so he was already back in India by the time I got to India. But it took me a little while longer to meet him. I met him. I got to India in early November of 1970, and then I was introduced to him by Ram Dass in February at Shivaratri in Delhi. Of the next of 71, so. And so that was the first world tour. Then the second one I went on with him, at least at the beginning of it, which was in 74, and that lasted for 2 years. And as soon as we came here first, well, Singapore, and then to Perth, and then to Melbourne, and then to Sydney and Tasmania, and then to California. And in California, Baba sent us away to start an ashram in Ann Arbor. So he was in the West from 74, 76, and then from 76 to 78, he was back in India, and then again in the West for two more years at the end of the 70s, and then went back in 81, I think, and then took samadhi in 82. So three world tours. And so these are question answers from those world tours. Question, what is the Siddha philosophy of the human soul? And Baba says, in Siddha Yoga, we understand completely that our soul is the soul of God. Just as space permeates everywhere, and you cannot break space into pieces, in the same way God or consciousness pervades everywhere and everything. That is within us also. You cannot break consciousness into pieces. Question. What happens to our human consciousness as we know it after we die? Baba, even after a human being dies, consciousness remains the same because consciousness is whole. Just as a person changes his clothes, when the clothes get old, he throws them away and puts on new clothes. In the same way, the soul discards this body and enters another body. Another physical body? Baba, yes. When does this process stop? When does the soul stop having to come to this planet? Baba says, after you become completely established in the soul, after you burn all your karmas, whether good or bad, in the fire of knowledge, the soul stops coming and going. That is called the state of liberation in this life, which would be jivan mukti. Once you become established in the self, there's no more coming and going. So
what's the difference between unity, consciousness, and soul?
That's just what I was going to talk about. I was going to say that for Baba, synonymous were soul, self, Atman, and universal consciousness, and God. They're all equal. They're sort of looking at them the same thing from different aspects. So you could say, he would often say that there's a flame of God within each person. That meant the consciousness within each person, which meant the self. That if we could go to deep enough into who we really are, we come to that which is transpersonal, beyond the person, and that is universal consciousness. It's conscious, but it's impersonal, and that's our essential nature. Then overlaid on that impersonal divine consciousness, we construct an ego self, which is a kind of a limited of false self, and because of that, we have all the kinds of suffering and joys and tribulations of life. But if we go deep enough, we get to the place where we're beyond that, and we're much less susceptible to the buffeting. So they're all synonymous. That's a good question. Baba goes on. Oh, another question. How can the self forget the self? Baba says, the self hasn't forgotten the self, but because of the outer senses and the mind, it appears that way. So it means to every one of us that there is some intuitive knowledge of the self always. We always have it, but we get confused by the senses and the mind, by our conditioning, by our training, by our culture, which continually diminishes us in different ways. There's an illusion that takes place, so we forget it. He says, when a person is going somewhere, if he misses his road, he has to undergo a lot of trouble. In the same way, man sometimes forgets himself too. The self appears to forget that it is the self. So we're the self forgetting that we're the self. This is called ignorance or avidya. This is also called maya or illusion. So these are the great words. In the yogic scriptures, they don't talk about sin. Well, they do talk about sin to some extent, but mainly they talk about ignorance. It's not that we're sinful. We're not purposely stupid. We're just ignorant. And the great illusion, the illusion that we have, and it's a tremendous illusion that we are associated only with this body-mind. It's a very powerful illusion and takes a lot of practice and understanding to get beyond that illusion. Okay, another question. This is a really good one. Why are there blocks along the spiritual path? I love Baba's answer. Baba says, as you travel along the non-spiritual path, have you noticed any blocks? Aren't there blocks on your mundane path? Have you looked at your own life? How many psychologists have you had in your life? How many doctors? How many girlfriends? How many boyfriends? How many enemies? How many other people? Do you find blocks only on the spiritual path? If you have all these things in your bound path, that means in your mundane path where you're a bound soul, Why should the spiritual path be so different? It's a very good answer. It's not as though life is so easy without spiritual life, because sometimes people would whinge about it. Oh, spiritual life is so hard, Baba. And he'd say, well, try worldly life, that's worse. He says, it's not hard. It's only because you're resistant to unfolding that you find it hard. And somebody once asked him, how long is the spiritual path? And Baba says, only as long as your ignorance. It's a great answer. So it's our resistance that makes it hard. There's nothing limiting you. Be my guest. Be Ramana Maharshi in this moment. Realize God now, here and now, and be forever in bliss, right? He's saying. Because you limit yourself, you feel that everything is blocked. That's one of the illusions, that we're blocked by circumstances, by other people, by fate, by all these things. This is a great illusion. The yogis say blocked because of our own minds and our own understanding. And we're completely free to unblock it, to make the choices that lead towards freedom. For example, he says, now you might see something as very negative. But once you reach perfection, everything appears as nothing but love. See, I would contemplate that. Baba said that. I think, what the hell is he talking about? He says, everything does seem quite negative. And it feels terrible, and I'm sort of miserable right now. But he says, it's all really love. Could it be my own attitude that's doing it? Could it really be my own attitude? And after I inquired like that, I said, yeah, it's my own attitude. So anyway, the world which is full of so many different things appears later on as nothing but love. The spiritual path is not as difficult as the mundane path. It is much easier. On the spiritual path, you don't have fist fights. Well, I'm not so sure about that one. You do not have to give or take. You do not have to do anything with others. All you have to do is just turn inside and meditate on the self very peacefully. Isn't that true?
Yeah.
Yes, Baba. Okay. Okay, here's a good one. What is evil? What can people do about it? What will he say about it? Gives a very, very beautiful answer. Baba says, evil is hurting other people. There is no worse evil. People talk about heaven and hell, but there's no hell worse than hurting others. Even to think of torturing or hurting people is hell. People should give up this tendency. They should think about helping other people. This is from the viewpoint of mundane life, he says. But if you rise a little bit above this level, evil has a different meaning. So from the mundane point of view, evil is hating others or hurting others. And now he's talking at another level, more intimate level, from the point of view of our own practice. If one does not respect his own self, that too is evil. The worst sinner is one who does not understand his own self, one who insults his own self, one who does not attain his own self. It is because we do not understand our own self that we do not understand another's inner self. Because of this ignorance, evil is created. So when one perceives his own inner self through meditation and knowledge, he finds the divinity that lies within. Then he will not see anything bad in others. He will not find anything evil. This is a fact. Only one self resides within everyone. That self is all pervasive, and we should become aware of this. There's only one self, but many, many forms. All these clothes, all the makeup that you put on, all the decorations that you put on your body, all these outer appearances have no significance. Only the inner self has significance. There is only one self for this whole world. That self belongs neither to the east nor the West, neither to white or black, neither to man or woman, neither to high nor low. That self is supremely beautiful and full of light. It is within everyone in the form of light. When this is so, if you hurt other people, that is the greatest sin you can commit in your life. Good, isn't it? He says, if a person understands his own true nature, he finds that everyone is his own self. We should always think of that. It is amazing that even though the supremely beautiful self is within us, even though it is God's flame that has taken birth in different forms, still we are unhappy. Still we are sad. From his point of view, why are we doing it? We're making bad choices, and because of these bad choices, inner choices, we suffer. So from the point of view of the realized being, why are we making these choices? They're perverse. Make the right choice and become full of love. He says, because of the ego, we consider ourselves great and high in other ways, but we should try to understand our true greatness. Because the ego takes satisfaction in very minor things. We should understand how great we really are. Even though the self is so close to you, if you have not discovered that self, if you have not attained that self, what good is that ego? So you can have all kinds of external triumphs. But if you haven't discovered the self, what's the use? You should also try to give up the things that intoxicate you, the things that disturb or upset your mind. They are also evil. You know, if we stop dwelling on things that disturb us, that would be a tremendous thing. We said we brood, and as we brood, we don't solve the issue. We just get more deeply entrenched in it. Anyway, Baba says, some people take drugs, which are nothing but poison. There is greater intoxication in your own self. Once you get high on that, you will never come down. Yeah. It never spoils you. It never gives you any trouble. It does not make you bad. The great Siddha, Tukaram, said that to help other people is the greatest merit, and to hurt other people is the worst evil. So, another one in that same line. This is really good. Question says, I've had an aversion to the same person for the past 4 years. How do I overcome this? What's Baba going to say? He says, forget it. 4 years ago, you had this hatred toward someone. Now so much time has passed by. Why did you write this abhorrence so deeply, so clearly in your heart? A person should be like a child in the sense that it should have hatred only for a short time. It shouldn't last too long. It's true, you know, children have moved through the kaleidoscope of moods. You know, they're crying like the heart is broken, and you give them something and suddenly they're happy. Then they're crying, and you know. A person should be like a child. It shouldn't last too long. The scriptures say a superior person has anger only for a short time, and then he forgets it. The middle quality person remembers anger for 2 or 3 hours. The inferior person remembers anger for a day and a night. However, a sinner never forgets anger until he dies. So a good person should forget anger very quickly. You should understand this. If you have an aversion to a person, it is making a hole in your heart. Great line, isn't it? Great line. Therefore, aversion is not good. Forget it and shake hands with this man. God will be happy with you. I've often told the story of like a powerful experience I had in Ganeshpuri. When I was standing in front of Baba, and all the ashramites were around having darshan, it was in the evening before the final chant. And sometimes he would come out and we'd file by him and give us a little bit of idli, you know, a little treat. And so it was great. And stand there and you'd absorb the atmosphere and so on. And this particular night, I was just incredibly negative and judgmental. Wasn't all that rare, by the way, but I was thinking, looking around at all the ashramites, and I had the ability to see everything wrong with every one of them. And what was wrong with their sadhana, their attitude, you know? This one's this way, this one's that way, you know, they're all just worms and so on. And I'm thinking like that, and then it was burning a hole in my heart. And suddenly I became aware of it. I said, you know, it's a stupid attitude you have, because these are actually great people. They've come, traveled around half the world, left comfortable middle-class homes, most of them, and traveled and doing austerities in an ashram in India to know God, you know. They're great people. They're the rarest of people. Most of the people are doing other kinds of dumb things, but they're actually trying to do something. They're actually great people, and the bad person is you with your stupid attitude. So I got mad at myself, but I didn't know what to do about it, but in that moment I prayed to Baba. I said, Baba, get rid of this wrong understanding and let me see them all as divine. And it happened exactly like that. Suddenly, this incredible shakti lifted me, and I was in a state of ecstasy. And the bell rang, and I went into the chant. My job was to give out the books. I was the hall monitor. And I was in a state of ecstasy, and I was seeing, instead of all these wretched sinners who I hated, I was seeing gods and goddesses. And, you know, it was like my prayer, because my prayer was for a good thing, an inner thing, and not for stuff. I said, damn, I could have asked for a Mercedes-Benz, too. it's working. But anyway, I was in this state, and it lasted for quite a long time. But I came down, and now I look critically at everyone. So shake hands with this man. God will be happy with you. Yeah. And one last one, then one can meditate. The question is, when you speak about God, whom or what are you referring to? Yeah. Baba says, the God I speak of is present everywhere, and is particularly present within the heart. His nature is the highest bliss, supreme bliss. His body is pure light. Though he is without a material body, he can assume any number of bodies. Though he is without name and form, it is not difficult at all for him to assume any number of names and forms. Another name of God is the conscious self. It is God who inhabits the earth and makes it function. It is he who inhabits the body and makes it function. And what is it that if you've seen a dead person, what is it that is no longer in that body? The body's there, but something has left it. And that's the spirit, that's the self. So it inhabits the body and makes it function. The body would not function without the spirit, without the self, the soul, in there. He says, just as I'm seeing you distinctly, if you were to meditate, you could also see God. As you go deeper in meditation and pass from one plane to another, you'll see him in four different forms. On the physical plane, you will see him as red light. And Baba described the four inner bodies and associated different light with each of them. So the physical body is associated with red light. On the subtle plane, you'll see him as a white, thumb-sized light. On the causal plane, you'll see him as black light. And on the supercausal plane, you'll see him as blue light, sparkling and shimmering. And a lot of people see blue light, and Baba often talked about this blue light of consciousness. He says, when you receive the Guru's grace and it begins to work inside you. In meditation, you'll be able to see the light that is God spread through every single blood corpuscle, every single molecule of flesh, every bit of bone. This is the God that I've experienced. Which other God do you want me to talk about? Question, who can see God in this way? Baba, everyone can see him. Everyone has the power of seeing him because he is within everyone. How? How, the person asks. Baba says, meditation is essential. For that, one should turn within. Also, one should associate with the guru. So that's how you see God. Okay. Any questions? Yes, sir.
Can I ask a question about consciousness?
About what?
Consciousness.
Yes, go ahead. Sure.
There's self-consciousness. There's just immersion in the task that you're doing, which involves consciousness.
Can you say?
There's immersion in the task, which involves consciousness.
Yep.
There's when you go to sleep, you can be a dream and be oblivious to the dream, but you can, or you could be conscious of the dream, and then there's deep sleep.
Yep.
That's my problem.
Yeah.
Where's God gone?
Well, the scriptures talk about the four states of consciousness, waking, dream, and deep sleep. And they say there's a fourth one beyond that. The problem is with deep sleep. Deep sleep is a place of great refreshment and great peace. But the problem is, as you say, that you're not conscious there. Your consciousness is occluded by sleep.
Nisargadatta talks about tripa, or some, I can't remember, but it's a state where you're sleeping.
What?
Turiya.
Oh, we're talking about Turiya.
Yeah.
So the fourth state is called Turiya state. And what it is like waking sleep. It's like being asleep but awake at the same time. So it's got all the peacefulness of sleep, but also the aliveness of waking.
But this is something you can attain, is it? Because I don't have
it. You can by practice, by meditation. You keep coming here and asking questions.
I don't have to come here, do I?
What?
I don't have to come here, do I?
You don't have to, but it helps. I bet you do a lot of things you don't have to do. So, no, coming here is very helpful because one of the great methods is satsang, meditation and satsang. If you just meditated every day and came to satsang, you'd do well. So, and this is the goal, the Turiya state. It's called the fourth state. You see, when you start reading scriptures, sometimes you get confused because you know, the mind can't really grasp these things, and so you get a certain picture, which may not actually be the truth. But this Turiya state is with us all the time. It's actually available. And there is another state of consciousness other than our mundane, limited consciousness. And in the ashram here, we call it the Shakti, spiritual energy. When we align ourselves a certain way, we feel this spiritual energy, this Shakti. And that Shakti is like, you could say, the footprints of God. When you can stay in touch with this Shakti, you're experiencing God directly.
Is that like grace?
Like what?
Grace.
It's exactly like grace.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're experiencing grace, the world of grace. And we phase in and out of grace. When our mind becomes full of fear or negativity or jealousy or anger, we lose touch with that grace. But if we learn how to move the mind in a certain way, inwardly, towards peace, towards grace, we can live in that world of grace. Because the world of grace is very real. It's just as real as this room, as Baba said. It's just as real as looking at somebody else. And you can get in touch with this world, and then you live in a transformed universe, which is full of light and love and energy. But it's a great task to move ourselves from being limited and contracted to being in touch with that highest. And I think many people in the room know what I'm talking about. They've experienced grace, and then they've found that they lose grace, and then they try to discover why they lose it, and then they overcome it, and grace comes back. Grace, sometimes it comes from nowhere. They don't know why it comes, because it's grace, you know. But we have to cooperate by trying to align ourselves with it, and then it comes as a gift of the divine. But grace is a real experience, and all the sages agree that it's a real experience. From a Western scientific, negative, atheistic point of view, it's denied, but you can find it yourself if you work on it. But you have to make that effort. So it's a real thing.
It comes of its own accord, though.
It comes what?
Of its own accord.
Of its own accord, but you can sort of make it want to come visit you. Nobody can control God or that higher power. Nobody can control it. But we can open to it. We can purify our minds and our hearts and invite that grace. And there are certain things to do, is to move towards it. As my friend Master Charles says, he says, what does he say? If you want to suntan, put yourself in the company of the sun. So it's good to put yourself in the company where grace is possible. Visit great beings, go to Ganesh Puri, come to the ashram, and meditate and do practice. These are all methods. That's a very good question. Very good question. But never for a minute doubt that what I'm talking about is real, isn't real. It is real. It's very real. It's actually the goal of life. We're so confused by life and so badly educated, miseducated in every possible conceivable way, that we don't know what the hell we're here for. And so at some point in the process of living our confused and miserable existence, we wake up to the point where we start to realize that it is about grace, and it is about understanding the self. And there is a path, and there is a way, and then maybe we put ourselves in touch with beings who've walked that path, and they help us connect to that grace, and that's a wonderful thing. So, thanks, great questions. All right, should we meditate?
Yes.
All right. Okay, so we'll do a little Shiva process, guided meditation, then we'll meditate beyond that. So let's close our eyes and go inside and let's follow Baba's teaching there. When you look inside, just be aware that the self is within you. Be aware that the Turiya state is within you. Be aware that Shakti is within you. Everything that all the great beings have experienced, from Jesus to the Buddha to Bhagwan Nityananda, to Sai Baba of Shirdi, to Akalkot Swami, Nim Karoli Baba, whoever they are, Ananda Maima, they've all been able to and tell us that this experience is within us. So no matter what experience you're having when you turn within, at the core of that experience is joy and peace and love. Just be aware of that. Now bring your attention to the navel area. Be aware of the feeling in the navel area. Does it feel tense or relaxed? and relax the navel area. Say, I let go. I relax. Now bring your attention up to the heart area. Feel the feeling in the heart area. Is the heart full of love? Or does the heart feel contracted? See if you can open your heart to love. I love. Bring your attention up to the throat area. Does that feel blocked or open? Bring the thought into the throat. I express myself with love. I say what I need to say with love. Just as a writer, as a poet, looks for the right words. We have to find the right words that express our truth, not our false personality. So I speak with love. And now bring your attention up to the third eye, the Ajna chakra in the brow. Wisdom central. This is the intellectual center. Does that feel contracted or expanded? Bring in the thought, I think clearly. I think large and clear and true thoughts. There's a light within my third eye. Blazing light. And now we'll meditate for about 7 minutes.